The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On today's show, we're going to take a close look at stigma and how to address it. But first, on last week's show, we featured the launch of the European Union Drugs Agency, technically the relaunch and rebranding of the organization formerly known as the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction. One of the speakers at that news conference was Dr. Ana Povo, Secretary of State for Health in the Portuguese government.
Today marks a momentous occasion for European Union. We gather not just to celebrate the launch of a new agency, but a renewed commitment to tackling the complex issues of drugs across our continent. For over three decades, Portugal and Lisbon have been proud to house European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction, a vital resource for evidence-based drug policy. This dedication continues today as we usher the European Union Drugs Agencies. The EUDA builds upon the incredible foundation laid by the Monitoring Center. It signifies a deeper commitment not only in monitoring drug trends, but actively shaping a more effective response and developing innovation solutions. Portugal has a long story of innovation and leadership in the area of drug policy. In 1919, we are one of the first countries to decriminalize the use of all drugs. This policy was controversial at the time, but have proved to be a great success in public health and social terms. And has said Portugal has a model for other countries considering drug policy reforms. In 2024, Portugal took another step in reinforcing our commitment in the area with the reformulation of the National Institute for Addictive Behaviors and Dependence, combining strategic level and local level interventional service across the country. Drug use is a complex challenge. It's not simple about law enforcement or treatment. We must address the social and economic factors that contribute to drug use: poverty, unemployment, and lack of opportunity. Building strong communities is essential to a holistic approach. I'm sure that working together, we can overcome it. The EU Drug Agency has the potential to be transformative, and it can foster a coordinated European response to new and emerging threats. Portugal stands ready to be a stronger partner in this endeavor. We want to continue working together, strengthening partnership and synergy with our national institute. The Portuguese government wishes the agency and its team every success. We are sure that Lisbon will continue to inspire you in its rich history of leadership and action in the area of drug policy. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ana Povo, Secretary of State for Health in the Portuguese government, speaking recently at the news conference announcing the launch of the European Union Drugs Agency, formerly known as the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Well, as I said at the top of the show, today we're looking at stigma. According to the National Harm Reduction Coalition, quote, "Stigma is a social process linked to power and control, which leads to creating stereotypes and assigning labels to those that are considered to deviate from the norm or to behave badly. Stigma creates the social conditions that make people who use drugs believe they are not deserving of being treated with dignity and respect, perpetuating feelings of fear and isolation." End quote. I mean, we stigmatize people about all sorts of things. Weight, body size and shape, mental health, physical health, sexual orientation, gender identity, housing status, employment, criminal record, as well as whether or not people use alcohol, tobacco, or other drugs. Since 2015, the Stigma Indicators Monitoring Project at the University of New South Wales has documented the expression and experiences of stigma and discrimination towards people affected by blood-borne viruses and sexually transmitted infections, such as HIV, hepatitis C, gonorrhea, syphilis, etc. Researchers with the Stigma Indicators Monitoring Project presented some of their findings recently in a webinar hosted by the University of New South Wales. Let's hear from one of the researchers. Dr. Elena Kama is a research fellow at the Centre for Social Research and Health at University of New South Wales, Sydney. She's a mixed methods early career researcher with a background in criminology, social science, and public health. Her research focuses on experiences of marginalization and violence, including stigma and discrimination and sexual violence.
So just to give a little bit of background on stigma to help explain how we came to developing this measure. So stigma is a social process of exclusion of a person or groups of people who are perceived to have characteristics or identities that are viewed negatively by the broader social group. And stigma can be understood as a process of steps that involve labeling people as different, linking those differences to negative stereotypes, separating people from others or that us and them mentality, and then using these differences to exclude and discriminate against people. And it's really important to understand that stigma only occurs when there are power imbalances, which is really how those processes of exploitation, control, or exclusion of other people are achieved. And we know that health-related stigma is targeted at perceived health conditions or features of identity or behaviours that are assumed to be associated with those conditions. So for instance, stigma towards hepatitis C might be related both to fears around infectiousness of the virus, as well as negative attitudes towards assumed transmission routes, like the shared use of injecting equipment and injecting drug use more broadly. And we also know that stigma has many negative impacts on affected communities, including on their health and well-being, and that it remains one of the most significant barriers to engagement in healthcare. So stigma occurs at multiple levels. So at the individual level, which is how individuals might respond to their own experiences of stigma. So that can include things like when a person comes to accept the negative judgments that other people hold towards them and come to self-stigmatize or internalize that stigma. Interpersonal stigma, which refers to interactions between people who experience stigma and others. So for instance, between health workers and consumers. And that includes attitudes and behavioral intentions that people hold towards stigmatized groups of people. At the organizational or institutional level is how stigma might manifest in the norms or the policies of specific institutions. And that can include healthcare, but it can also include workplaces, religious and educational institutions. And then at the structural level, which is how stigma can manifest through policy and legislation. And the example that I give there is around the criminalization of substance use, which results in over-policing of people who use and inject drugs, and also influences then representations of people who use drugs in the media and how the general population thinks about drug use. So all of that to say, when developing an indicator of stigma, we were really trying to distill quite a complex construct into a single question. And that there are levels of stigma that we wouldn't be able to capture within such an indicator, such as structural stigma. So when doing background research for developing the indicator, both in terms of people's experiences and how stigma is expressed, we found that existing measures tended to focus on one specific condition like HIV and include multiple items. But we really wanted to develop something that was brief and that could be used across different conditions and identities. So this is what we've come up with. In the last 12 months, have you experienced any stigma or discrimination? For example, avoidance, pity, blame, shame, rejection, verbal abuse or bullying in relation to your, and then the options are sexual orientation, injecting drug use, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, sex work, and sexually transmissible infections. And then in recognition that healthcare is a really key setting in which stigma and discrimination occurs, we also developed an additional item to try to measure this, which is in the last 12 months, to what extent do you agree that the following occurred in relation to your, and then the options can be substituted out depending on the survey, the population that we're surveying, injecting drug use, Hep C, Hep B, HIV, sex work, etc. And the item is health workers treated me negatively or differently to other people. And then across both of those measures, the response options are never, rarely, sometimes, often, and always. And then as I mentioned, in terms of the expression of stigma, we're really interested in the attitudes of health workers and the general public. And in developing this indicator, we thought that there needed to be a bit of a preamble to try to encourage people to respond to this honestly, because obviously not everyone is going to feel comfortable expressing those kinds of negative attitudes. So the preamble is, we may judge or regard people negatively at times because of differing cultural background, lifestyle, sexuality, or health issues. The following question asks about whether you would do this to others, and we understand that it might be difficult for you to answer. Please be honest in your responses. They will be kept anonymous and confidential. And the question is, would you behave negatively towards other people because of their, and then again, the option, sexual orientation, injecting drug use, and others? So as I mentioned, these are brief measures of stigma, and stigma is a very complex construct. When running our own surveys, we do tend to include additional measures alongside those. So for instance, Tim will speak to this in a moment, but we do include questions for affected communities to ask if they undertake any strategies to try to avoid experiencing stigma and discrimination in healthcare settings. And we also might include measures that try to get at the well-being of people as well.
That was Dr. Elena Kama, a research fellow at the Centre for Social Research and Health at the University of New South Wales, Sydney. She presented recently at a webinar on the Stigma Indicators Monitoring Project. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Dr. Timothy Brody is a senior research fellow at the Center for Social Research and Health. His current research interests include addressing stigma and discrimination among communities affected by blood-borne viruses, HIV prevention, and the lived experiences of marginalized groups within society.
So this is just to give a bit of a snapshot of where and how we've collected data since 2016. So broken down by the different priority groups that Eleanor has already outlined. So you can see that there have been a lot of surveys over many years across each of the different groups and varying sample sizes as well. A couple of things to quickly point out without going into too much detail. So in 2016, we were really testing things out, seeing how the indicator would work within various surveys. So some of those samples are much smaller and we were kind of just testing the waters to see how things would work and kind of refining some of the wording and methods. By 2018, kind of then around the 2018 to 2020 data collection rounds, we were fine-tuning some more of the data collection processes to see what was going to be the most effective way of reaching the samples we wanted and how we'd be able to do that in the most effective and meaningful way moving forward. So a little bit of difference in terms of our recruitment strategies for some of those rounds. But then from 2018 to 2020 and moving onwards, we've been far more consistent. So we're now in a position where we're able to track things in a much more streamlined way and a much more consistent way across each of these different populations. Other thing I'll just quickly flag on this slide, you can see that I've got sample sizes listed for most of them, with the exception of the hepatitis B stream. Where we've been dealing with some of the affected populations, you know, directly asking about their experiences of stigma and discrimination. For hepatitis B, we've taken a slightly different approach and focused on some of the community groups most heavily affected by hepatitis B in Australia and looked at community attitudes. So there's a much broader series of surveys that we've run around that. With Chinese and Vietnamese community, also Korean and Filipino, and we're going to be starting very soon with Middle Eastern and African communities. And also just noting that this year we're starting some more targeted work with people living with hepatitis B as well. So that data collection is starting very soon or had just started. So hopefully those results will be available very soon. So to quickly run through all of our results over, you know, 8 or 9 years worth of data collection over the next couple of slides. These graphs are kind of an example of the information that we get out of the stigma indicator. So breaking things down across the never, rarely, sometimes, often, always experience of stigma in the last 12 months. And you can see here, so for the people living with HIV, as an example, over three data collection time points, we can see a reduction in their reports of experienced stigma in the last 12 months. But I'll come back to some more of the nuance around that on one of the later slides. Whereas you can see on the other graphs for people who inject drugs and people living with hepatitis C, looking at stigma related to those, much more consistent reports over time. And as I mentioned, you can see From the early years where we were trying to refine some of the measures, there's a little bit of a change, but then over time, we are starting to see some very consistent results and very little change in those reports of stigma. Looking at our work with men who have sex with men, there's quite a bit of fluctuation within that. And one thing to point out in terms of experiencing stigma in relation to sexual orientation in 2018 is where we saw the most frequent reports of experiencing stigma over the past 12 months, which coincided with the marriage equality postal vote and all of the public debate around that. So we can see contextually some of the how social issues and a particular time can influence some of the data that we're collecting. And then with our sex work surveys, we've started doing those more recently than some of the others, but again, very little change between 2020 and 22, where we've collected those, run those surveys, and with that population reporting very high levels of stigma across the board. On the next couple of slides, just going to look at the negative treatment from health workers, as Eleanor mentioned earlier. And again, we've seen relatively similar trends. Typically, the negative treatment from health workers seems to be slightly less frequent than the overall reports of stigma. But again, still across each of the groups, there are sizable portions who report experiencing these this negative treatment within the last 12 months. And again, following similar trajectories where, you know, particularly for people who inject drugs, as an example, there hasn't been very much change over the time that we've been collecting this data. And again, looking at men who have sex with men and sex workers, we see, you know, very similar patterns over time where there isn't necessarily a huge amount of change in terms of these negative experiences in healthcare. As Eleanor mentioned before, we do include some extra items to look at some of the strategies that people might use to avoid being treated negatively in healthcare. And there are a range of different items we include across different surveys, but this is one of the key ones that we think is really important to highlight. Particularly when we look at that group of people who say they haven't experienced any stigma or they haven't been treated negatively within the last 12 months. What we also see is when we ask these follow-up items to look in a little bit more detail, you know, in the last 12 months, have you not told health workers about your drug use, or have you delayed accessing healthcare, not attended a follow-up appointment, or downplayed your need for pain relief medication and looked for different services? And so on this slide, we're looking at responses from people who inject drugs over our last two surveys, and across the board, very high proportions of people who, to some extent, have avoided some kind of healthcare interaction. And, you know, there will be many people who have said that they frequently do all of these to avoid experiences of stigma and discrimination within healthcare settings. And we can also see that within the most recent round of data from people living with HIV, collected just a couple of years ago. Well, you know, we've got close to half the sample saying that they hadn't disclosed their HIV status to health workers. So going back to, you know, what we saw in some of the trends of experiencing stigma within the last 12 months, while we saw an increase in the proportion of people living with HIV who said they had never experienced stigma or they hadn't been treated negatively by healthcare workers, we do still also have this large proportion who are delaying accessing healthcare or not disclosing, which may go some way to explain some of those experiences. It just helps to give a bit of a fuller picture of what's going on rather than when we're trying to condense such a complex construct into one single indicator. Some of this nuance might get a little bit missed, which is why we've established some additional items to try and explain that in a little bit more detail. So as I mentioned, hepatitis B, we've taken a slightly different approach. And most of our work to this stage has been looking at the these cultural groups as a whole and looking at their attitudes towards hepatitis B and some of their expectations around stigma and discrimination. Because it's been quite difficult up to this point to recruit large populations or large samples of people living with hepatitis B, we've asked these population groups, if you had hepatitis B, so think hypothetically, do you think that you would be, would you experience stigma or discrimination in relation to that? And you can see across the Chinese, Vietnamese, Filipino, and Korean communities, all very high expectations that they would experience stigma. So, you know, we're tapping into some of the broader community attitudes here, and looking at, you know, how the community as a whole views hepatitis B, or how they think that their community views hepatitis B and some of those attitudes. So we are now extending that work and working closely with some community partners to recruit samples of people who are actually living with hepatitis B as well, so that we can look at that alongside these community attitudes and hopefully get a much more detailed and nuanced picture of what these community attitudes are towards hepatitis B and how that relates to actual experiences of people living with Hep B as well. So watch this space. There'll be more results coming hopefully a bit later on this year. Moving on then to talk about express stigma. So you saw from the slides that Eleanor was presenting earlier, when we run our surveys with healthcare workers or the general public, we ask a very blunt question about would you behave negatively towards people because of each of these particular attributes? And they answer to all seven of those. So there's quite a lot of information that comes through just within that one question matrix. One thing to point out with our healthcare worker data is we have changed the sampling strategy over time. And so early on, it was a sample of people who were engaged within the bloodborne virus workforce. Our second round of data collection was self-selected through social media. So we got relatively biased samples there. Whereas in our most recent three rounds, they've been much more generalized samples of healthcare workers, not self-selected, not engaged specifically with the bloodborne virus workforce. So it gives us kind of a broader view of the health workforce across Australia more generally. And so you can see, there is some ups and downs. So interestingly, where we can see HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, those lines stick very closely together, whereas some of the more behavioural things, so injecting drug use and sex work, tend to attract a little bit more stigma or more negative attitudes from healthcare workers. And then sexual orientation consistently comes down as the least stigmatised, but again, still a certain proportion who very bluntly say, yes, I would behave negatively towards people because of each of these reasons. For the general public, again, recruitment has been a little bit different across each of these waves, but similar patterns that are still worth noting. Again, HIV, hepatitis B and hepatitis C hang very closely together, regardless of the sampling strategy. And the more behavioural items tend to attract more negative attitudes or be more likely to be behaved negatively towards. There's a lot we could delve into. We don't really have the time in this seminar, unfortunately, but one thing that I do think is worth pointing out is that across both the healthcare worker sample and the general public sample, even though we do have some different demographics and slightly different sampling strategies for different time points, one thing that comes through as a very consistent finding is that people who self-report as being more conservative are more likely to say that they would behave negatively towards every single one of these groups. So political conservatism and our measure around stigma, very highly correlated regardless of which survey or which sampling strategy we've used. And so there's quite a lot to unpack within that as well. That's also true when it comes to our stigma interventions work. So that's kind of leveraged off the monitoring work where, it's been all well and good to say that we can track this indicator over time. We can look at how community attitudes might be changing or not changing over time. But what can we do about it? So we've established a couple of small short-term intervention projects looking at different approaches that might make an impact on people's attitudes and their likelihood of behaving negatively towards each of these groups. So as an example, we ran a contact-based intervention using some short videos of people with lived experience and ran that with the general public. We saw immediate positive impact from that project, although the long-term effects weren't quite as strong, with a bit of attrition over time over the couple of months following exposure to the video stimuli. We then ran a social norms-based intervention specifically targeted at healthcare workers, again, using the short video approach online surveys, which again, straight after watching the video, we saw some positive effects. And one of the really interesting findings that came from that was when we were able to change people's perceptions of their colleagues' attitudes, that change predicted a change in people's own attitudes as well. So kind of giving us a few more tools in the toolbox, I suppose, about how we might be able to influence some kind of change within people's attitudes towards each of these stigmatized groups. Following the positive results we saw from both of these, the resources that we developed in our very limited capacity have then been developed further by ASHRM in a much more professional and very expert way. So we put the link up there on the website where you can see how the concepts that we have tested out in these intervention studies have then been developed into these more professional videos and available resources for people to be able to use more broadly.
That was Dr. Timothy Brody, a senior research fellow at the Center for Social Research and Health, speaking at a webinar on the Stigma Indicators Monitoring Project that was hosted by the University of New South Wales, Sydney. Another of the speakers at this webinar was Mish Pony. They're the CEO of Scarlet Alliance, the Australian Sex Workers Association. Mish has over 15 years of experience advocating for trans, queer, and sex worker communities, including international work in the Asia-Pacific region.
And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm dialing in from the land of the Gadigal people today. So we at Scarlet Alliance find the Stigma Monitoring Project a very powerful tool in our advocacy, including in dealing with the media. Sex workers and our organisations know that sex workers face stigma and discrimination, and we know its profound impacts. But this research gives us a tool that quantifies this community knowledge. It enables us to track it over time, though the data we have so far shows not much change, but that it's also backed up by a reputable research institution. We've also been able to partner with CSRH on the publication of papers outside of the strict definition of healthcare. One of these papers is Stigma's Impacts on Sex Workers and the Criminal Justice System, and the title of that being I Wouldn't Call the Cops If I Was Being Bashed to Death, Sex Work, Horse Stigma and the Criminal Legal System. There's also been a separate community paper on the intersection of stigma and access to mental health services. And there's an upcoming paper on stigma and the media and the impacts of that. So we know that stigma impacts not just on health, but also sex workers' access to housing, banking services, safety and relationships. And that's captured in some of the data we've been able to gain from this project. The attitudes from the general public and healthcare workers has also been quite shocking, but not unexpected. But again, this has translated what we know as sex workers into quantifiable data that is much more easily digested by policymakers, media, and government. And having those concrete impacts of stigma, including healthcare avoidance, really underlines why it's so critical for governments to turn their attention to this. And as was mentioned earlier on, the HIV strategies and other strategies for so long didn't have an indicator of success for stigma and discrimination, but we know that it's vital to address it in order for Australia to meet its targets, and that's why it's so critical that this project exists and continues to exist.
That was Mish Pony, CEO of Scarlet Alliance, Australian Sex Workers Association, speaking at a webinar on the Stigma Indicators Monitoring Project, which was hosted by the University of New South Wales, Sydney. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long!
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.